Welcome to And With Your Spirit, an Irish original program featuring articles from a variety of publications that bring you up to date on the world of food, spirits, and entertaining. I'm your reader today, Andrew Howe. Our first article comes to us as a recipe, as we do every week. How about part of that list of October recipes featured in foodandwine.com? Searching around here, there's so many great options. It's date scones with fleur de sel whipped butter. Looks just amazing. And it's featured on their current list. It takes the active time of 20 minutes and the total time of 1 hour and 30 minutes, and it makes 8 scones. This by Vinny Dotolo and John Shook, going back to October 2015, but it is on their current list. These tender scones offer an irresistible mix of sweet and salty thanks to the chopped dates in the batter and the salted butter served alongside. The ingredients you'll need are butter, one stick unsalted butter at room temperature, and then a half tablespoon of fleur de sel. For the scones, you'll need 2 1/4 cups of all-purpose flour, plus more for dusting, 1/4 cup of granulated sugar, 1 1/2 tablespoons of baking powder, 1/4 teaspoon of kosher salt, 4 tablespoons of cold unsalted butter cubed, and then 1 cup of chopped pitted dates. Also, 1 1/2 cups of heavy whipping cream plus more for brushing, and you'll need turbinado sugar for sprinkling and then jam for serving. So here's how to make it. Make the butter. In a bowl, beat the butter with a fleur de sel until fluffy, about 3 minutes worth. In step 2, make the scones. Line a baking sheet with parchment paper. In a large bowl, sift the 2 1/4 cups of flour with the sugar and baking powder and salt. Using your fingertips, rub the butter into the flour mixture until it resembles coarse crumbs. Add the dates and toss to coat in flour. Drizzle in the 1 1/2 cups of cream and stir until a dough forms. Cover with plastic wrap and let stand for 10 minutes. In step 3, turn the dough onto a lightly floured work surface and knead gently until it comes together. Pat the dough into a 5 by 10 inch rectangle. Then cut into 8 equal squares, and arrange on the prepared sheet, and then refrigerate for 30 minutes. In step 4, preheat your oven to 375 degrees Fahrenheit. Brush the tops of the scones with a cream and sprinkle with turbinado sugar. Bake for about 25 minutes until golden, then transfer the scones to a rack to cool completely and serve with salted whipped butter and jam. That just sounds absolutely wonderful. Well, how about to go with that? We take a look at a cocktail for October. The Charanda Gooey. In this twist on the 3 dots and a dash cocktail, San Diego barman Stephen Kerpinski welcomes Funky Charanda, a Mexican cane spirit, to the party. So what you'll need to make it are 2 ounces of Charanda Blanco, and then 1/2 ounce of fresh lime juice. Also, 1/2 ounce of honey syrup, a 1-to-1 ratio. You also need 1/2 ounce of grapefruit juice, 1/2 ounce of velvet falernum, 1 dash of Angostura bitters, 2 dashes of saline solution, finally, at 2-to-1 ratio. The tools you'll need are a shaker and a strainer, the glass, a double old-fashioned, and the garnish, a grapefruit peel, two pineapple leaves. What you'll do to make it, add all of the ingredients to a shaker and shake with a few large ice cubes. Strain into a rocks glass over crushed ice, then stir to combine and top with more crushed ice, and then garnish. That by Stephen Kerpinski at 100 Proof in San Diego with ImbibeMagazine.com. So how about Mezcal Meets the Ice Cream Cocktail by Hannah Kotler, recipe by Lynette Marrero, on August 27th, 2019, when this was submitted in WineAndSpiritsMagazine.com. While their origins aren't entirely known, boozy ice cream creations have been finding their way to the bar since at least the late 19th century. Cocktail recipe books from that era, along with ones from the 1920s and 30s, included an array of drinks with ice cream at the forefront. Yet despite its rich history, the ice cream cocktail is rarely a bar's leading drink. Perhaps it's the sugar, fat, and freezing temperatures, or a combination of all three factors, each notoriously difficult to work with, that prevent ice cream from its place behind the bar. This summer, bartender Lynette Marrero, beverage director for Brooklyn's Llama Inn and founder of the annual all-female bartending competition Speed Rack, has been helping ice cream make its cocktail comeback, developing a line of drinks for Morgenstern's Finest Ice Cream. The parlor picked Marrero for their first foray into cocktails to create a lineup of unique drinks inspired by and highlighting the shop's unconventional flavors. Marrero says the first style of ice cream cocktail she thought of were in the line of old fashions because of the endless combinations of syrups she could use and the fact that Nicholas Morgenstern, founder of the shop, already uses bourbon and Japanese whiskey in his flavors. From there, Marrero focused on classic cocktail categories and styles, and then adapted them to the ice cream flavors. Morgenstern's has a classic vibe and strives to make the American classics sundaes, says Marrero. I was inspired by this mission, she says. The results? Variations on a daiquiri, highball, scroppino, and, of course, an old-fashioned, a codex for ice cream and spirit combinations. As she tested the ice cream cocktail recipes, Marrero found that, surprisingly, just about any spirit would do. We even found gin, which seemed trickiest, to be successful, says Marrero. That includes mezcal, which she used in the banana durian. The trick to finding the right spirit was in the combinations. Whiskey and rum pair best with nut-flavored ice creams and chocolate, while agave spirits go well with tropical fruits, Marrero explained. Her favorite spirit to work with when going frozen? Rum. We are all working on a codex for all of the flavors, but rum really sings, she says. While Marrero points out that Morgenstern has the tools to avoid the potential pitfalls that come with working with ice cream, handling temperatures, preventing meltage, and integrating liquid, regular bar and kitchen tools serve just fine. The milkshake is a great example of how to integrate liquid into ice cream. If you do not have a milkshake machine, you can use a blender, says Marrero. So the ingredients for the mezcal base, 2 ounces of mezcal, and then 1 ounce of coconut cream, a half ounce agave, 1 scoop of banana durian ice cream. Banana ice cream may be substituted. Then a pinch of salt, and then a 1/4 ounce of egg white, and then club soda. The instructions: place all the ingredients in a milkshake tin or blender. Pulse, blend until mixed, and then strain into a highball and top with club soda. Well, how about that? That looks pretty good. Bridget Hallinan brings us the best steak is worth the wait. On foodandwine.com, senior food editor Mary Frances Heck proves all you need for steakhouse-worthy steak is salt and thyme. While cooking steak isn't necessarily difficult, it can feel hard to recreate the kind of dish you get at a steakhouse. Perfectly medium rare and buttery soft with a crust on the outside. Luckily, our senior food editor Mary Frances Heck has a secret for making a seriously impressive ribeye at home. You'll need high-quality meat, of course, but the real key is salt and thyme. With 72 hours and a few pinches of kosher salt, you can turn a simple steak into something truly magical. Bonus, it only takes about 20 minutes to cook, so you can pre-season on the weekend for an easy weeknight meal. The key, don't cheap out on the meat. Mary Frances says when she's craving steak, she'll go to the butcher and get the best piece of steak that money can buy. It's worth a splurge. The bone and ribeye she uses are very tender and beautifully marbled. Plus, the bone also adds flavor to the meat and helps it cook evenly. Season the steaks by weight. Mary Frances' rule of thumb for seasoning the steaks is to use 1 teaspoon of kosher salt per pound. Her preferred brand is Diamond Crystal Kosher Salt. And from a distance, make sure you keep your hand about a foot above where the steak when... about a foot above the steaks when you're sprinkling on the salt. If you're directly on top of them, all the salt will go to one spot. As Mary Frances says, lift it up and let it rain. Get the edges of the steaks too and flip them over to get the other sides as well, pressing the salt in lightly each time. And then seriously, let them rest. The next step is let the steaks rest in the fridge for 72 hours. It may seem like a long time, but it's well worth it. Mary Frances says the salt gets sucked down into the steaks and seasons them to the core. It also denatures the protein in the meat, making the ribeyes more tender and delicious. Then rest more. After the steaks have rested for 72 hours, they should be dry to the touch. Let them sit out for another hour to come to room temperature while you preheat the oven at 400 degrees Fahrenheit. Then add a crank of freshly ground black pepper right before you cook them. Get the pan hot. When it's finally time to cook the steaks, heat up a 12-inch cast iron skillet, the best option, since they hold and transfer heat really well until it's riping hot. Mary Frances says you can also use a grill or a stainless steel skillet. You'll also want to use a grapeseed oil in the pan since it has a high smoke point and neutral flavor. And then add the steaks carefully. When the oil is shimmering, add the steaks to the pan. Mary Frances says you should add them away from your body so to avoid hot splatters. Movement and moisture are the enemies of caramelization. So let the steaks cook undisturbed for 4 minutes before you flip them for the first time. Once you do, make sure to sear on the edges for a beautiful color all around. Then grab the butter and garlic. Mary Frances adds whole garlic cloves so they won't burn to the skillet for aroma and unsalted butter as well, which helps the steaks baste while they roast. Then add the skillet to the oven at 400 degrees for 4 to 6 minutes. Take a basting steak. Mary Frances says the steaks out midway through cooking, takes the steaks out midway through cooking, flips them and bastes them while with the juices from the skillet. Then she adds them back to the oven for another 5 to 6 minutes until they reach medium rare, 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Don't be afraid to use a thermometer to make sure everything is cooked properly. Then let the steaks rest one more time. After they're out of the oven, let the steaks sit for about 10 minutes before slicing. This seals in the juices and lets the steaks reach a true medium rare. And then serve. To prepare the steaks, trace the knife along the edge of the bone. The meat will fall off. And then slice again across the grain into 1/2 to 3/4 inch slices. Top with a pinch of sel grease. And then treat yourself to wine. A labor of love like this steak deserves a good wine. Mary Frances recommends a bright, acidic, tannic red like Pinot Noir. So there it is. The best steak is worth the wait. Moving on to some news items now from foodandwine.com by Betty Gold. Yes, apples really are as good for you as you've always been told. Resist every urge to keep making the doctor away joke. There are so many things we look forward to in the fall. Cozy sweaters, scenic seasonal foliage, tailgating, and all things apple. Indeed, there are over 750 varieties of apples in the world and more than 100 types of apples that exist in the United States alone. And come fall, let's be honest, August, we're here for every single one of them. Why? Because there is nothing quite as satisfying as a first bite into a sweet, juicy, freshly picked apple. From savory salads to soups and flatbreads to sweet apple pies, turnovers, tarts, and more, apples make a delicious addition to every dish. Apples are also incredibly good for you, as says Hillary Cecier, RDN, a registered dietitian for Eat Clean Bro. Here's a breakdown of all the benefits you'll reap from fall's most festive fruit. Heart health. Apples are high in soluble fiber called pestin. Pectin binds to cholesterol and excess glucose in the digestive tract, leading to elimination. A large apple, 223 grams, has about 5 grams of fiber. Higher quercetin intake, a major component of apple peels, is also associated with decreased risk of type 2 diabetes. Antioxidants and blood glucose control. Polyphenols are active compounds found in plant foods that have an antioxidant activity. These polyphenols found in apples may help block the digestive enzyme needed for breaking starch into simple sugar and may improve the body's ability to utilize insulin more effectively. This could decrease blood sugar spikes after a meal. Anti-inflammatory. The antioxidant properties of polyphenols found in apples also helps to prevent chronic inflammation and reduce the risk of heart disease. Digestive health and gut bacteria. The fiber in an apple isn't the only benefit for digestion. They contain a ton of bacteria which provide the gut with a diverse microbiome. Organic apples seem to have more varied and balanced microbiome than conventionally grown apples. In weight loss, apples are satisfying and relatively low in calories. One medium apple contains less than 100 calories and contains a good amount of fluid and fiber which help you keep full longer. A study on the impact of fruit intake on weight loss discovered that overweight women who ate the equivalent of 3 apples or pears a day lost more weight on a low-calorie diet than women who didn't add fruit to their diet. And then finally, lung health. A study found that a mother's consumption of apples during pregnancy may have a protective effect against the development of childhood asthma, wheezing, and allergic disease. Several studies have found that regular apple consumption in adults is linked to reduced risk of lung cancer, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, and asthma. And it gives a link here for 40 festive favorite recipes for apples to make this fall. And there is a slideshow that goes with it. So what we'll do here We'll take a look and see if there's anything good, and it looks like there's several good things. How about this cake? Redirects us to realsimple.com. But it looks really good here. From realsimple.com, an Irish apple cake with custard sauce. Submitted by Betty Gold on September 18th, 2019. One of Ireland's most popular desserts, the spiced apple cake, is known for its crunchy sugar crust. Tart Granny Smith apples keep the cake from being too sweet, and a blend of ginger, nutmeg, and allspice make each bite warm and comforting. Served directly from the oven with a generous drizzle of custard sauce. So let's get the recipe here. Takes 25 minutes to prepare it, 50 minutes to cook the recipe, and then a total time of 1 hour and 15 minutes to prepare everything. So the ingredients you'll need are 3 cups of all-purpose flour, 1 tablespoon of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of each ground ginger, nutmeg, and allspice, 3/4 cup of unsalted butter, cold, diced into small pieces, 1 cup plus 2 tablespoons of granulated sugar, divided, and then 1.5 cups of Granny Smith apples. That's about 5 medium apples. Also, you'll need 3/4 cup of milk, 2 large eggs, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, and finally 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon. For the custard sauce, you'll need 1.5 cups of whole milk, 1 pinch of salt, 6 large egg yolks, 1/2 cup of granulated sugar, and then 1.5 teaspoons of vanilla extract. So here are the instructions for the cake. Preheat your oven to 375 degrees. Butter and flour a 9-inch springform pan and then set aside. In a very large mixing bowl, whisk together the flour, baking powder, salt, ginger, nutmeg, and allspice for 20 seconds. Add butter pieces and rub into mixture using fingertips until it resembles fine crumbs, and then stir in the 1 cup of sugar. Then you'll peel the apples, slice them in half, and core and stem them, then laying apples on the flat side, slice downward into pieces slightly less than 1/4 inch thick. Then dice those pieces into smaller chunks, about 2 or 3 chunks depending on the size of the apples. Add apples to the flour mixture and then toss well to evenly coat while working to separate any apples that may be stuck together. In a separate mixing bowl, whisk together the milk, eggs, and vanilla until combined. Pour the mixture over the apple flour mixture using clean hands and toss until combined, and the batter will be slightly lumpy, but that's fine. Just don't overmix it. Then pour the batter into a baking dish and spread into an even layer. In a small bowl, stir together the remaining 2 tablespoons of sugar plus 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon. Sprinkle evenly over the cake. Then bake in a preheated oven for 45 to 50 minutes until the toothpick inserted in the center comes out clean. Cool about 5 minutes on a wire rack and then remove the ring from the springform pan and allow the cake to cool to the desired temperature. Serve warm drizzled with warm custard sauce, or cool with cold custard sauce, however one prefers. And for the custard sauce, to make it, heat milk with a pinch of salt over medium heat and bring to a light boil. Just keep an eye on it and remove from the burner if needed before letting it rapidly boil. Meanwhile, add the egg yolks and sugar to a medium mixing bowl and whisk vigorously until pale and fluffy, about 2 to 3 minutes worth. Alternatively, if you can do this with an electric hand mixer on high speed for about 30 seconds, if you don't want to mix that long by hand, you can certainly do that. Reduce your burner to medium low heat, then while whisking the egg yolk mixture, slowly pour in 1/2 cup of hot milk mixture. Then while whisking milk in a saucepan slowly, pour the egg yolk mixture into a saucepan. Cook the mixture, whisking constantly until thickened and the mixture coats the back of a wooden spoon, about 3 to 4 minutes worth. Be careful not to overheat it. If you cook it too long or don't whisk the eggs, it will curdle. Immediately pour into a glass container, stir in vanilla and whisk about 20 seconds to cool slightly, then cover with plastic wrap pressing against the surface to prevent a skin from forming. Serve warm over the cake or cold. Store in a refrigerator or in an airtight container. And so that comes to us from Cooking Classy and also from realsimple.com and cookingclassy.com. ImbibeMagazine.com features a reading list of fall drink books. And the fall drink books have arrived, and this year's lineup of titles offers plenty of opportunity to elevate your beverage IQ with topics covering everything from beer to cider to wine cocktails. How about Grasping the Grape Demystifying Grape Varieties to Help You Discover the Wines You Love by Maurice Chevrerie. If I'm saying that right, Miss Chevrerie, if I'm not, my apologies. If you've ever been baffled by wine descriptions like tightly coiled or fast, slippery, sappy, then Maurice Chevrerie is the wine writer for you. A sommelier and James Beard Award-winning humorist for her Instagram account at Fresh Cut Garden House. Chevrerie brings her signature levity and whimsical illustrations to her new book, which breaks down 30-plus of the most prominent grape varietals from Albarino to Zinfandel, with a brief history and fun facts for each, plus tips for finding your new favorite wine. That came out on August 20th. Cocktails with a Twist by Kara Newman, with 5 cocktail books under her belt, including Shake, Stir, Sip, and Nightcap. Kara Newman's newest is right in line with her style of playful approachability. Cocktails with a Twist presents the concept of cocktail branches, riffs that can be created by building upon a classic. Flip to the section on the Gimlet, for example, to get the drink's history and classic recipe. Then open up the fold-out pages to reveal relatives like the Southside Last Word and Corpse Reviver No. 2. Expand your repertoire with 21 classic recipes and 141 drinks total. That comes out on August 27th. How about the Cider Revival? Dispatches from the Orchard by Jason Wilson. Keeping in line with the same signature storytelling line that made Booze Hound and Godforsaken Grapes entertaining travelogues, Jason Wilson makes a clear case for why cider is back and better than ever. For cider needs, it's an enjoyable meander through the who's who of the cider world, and for novices, Wilson does a fine job of explaining the drink's idiosyncrasies in an easily digestible manner. That came out on September 3rd. The Martini Cocktail, a meditation on the world's greatest drink with recipes by Robert Simonson. Following his 2014 book, Old Fashioned, Imbibe contributor Robert Simonson has tackled the single topic drinks exploration again with The Martini Cocktail. The book is as beautiful as it is insightful, and Simonson does an excellent job of tracing the obscure roots of the martini and offers a well-rounded collection of both historic and modern recipes. That comes out, or came out rather, on September 17th. Drink Better Beer, Discover the Secrets of Brewing Experts by Joshua M. Bernstein. And Imbibe contributing editor and all-around beer authority Joshua Bernstein returns to press in September with a new book on his beverage of choice. Gathering insight from more than 100 beer experts, Drink Better Beers shares the basics of navigating your local beer store like a pro and how to best enjoy your brewed hall. That was released on September 17th. How about Vignette, Stories of Life and Wine in 100 Bottles by Jane Lopez. Jane Lopez, or Lope's favorite beverage, or rather her beverage center, has taken her across the world from Catbird Seat in Nashville to 11 Madison Park in Manhattan to Attica in Melbourne, Australia. Along the way, she became a master sommelier, and her first book is as much personal storytelling as it is a guide to wine. In Vignette, Lopez weaves her personal narrative together with educational passages through 100 bottles of mostly wine and charming illustrations that depict, for example, the vine fungus botrytis, as explained by the sweet rotten behavior of the botrytis the cat. That comes out, or came out rather, on September 19th. How to Cocktail by America's Test Kitchen. As their name suggests, the folks at America's Test Kitchen are sticklers about testing recipes, and their first ever cocktail book takes the same rigorous approach. Organized by method of mixing, How to Cocktail not only offers up a slew of classic recipes and a handful of originals, but also explains how to properly use bar tools, breaks down the most common base spirits and mixers, and provides instructions for DIY syrups and infusions. It's a perfect beginner's guide for the cocktail curious. That came out, or comes out, actually, on October 8th. Last Call, Bartenders on Their Final Drink and the Wisdom of Rituals of Closing Time by Brad Thomas Parsons. Cocktail books typically lean in the direction of fun and entertainment, and while the latest book from Parsons, Bitters Amaro, certainly doesn't skip out on the good times, he strikes a tone more elegiac with Last Call, asking bartenders heavy questions about Mortality and Legacy. In 23 cities across the country, Parson inquires about what their final drink would be, and questions open a wider discussion into bar rituals, cocktail culture, and the inherent appeal of those welcoming rooms in the wee hours of the night. That comes out on October 22nd. That sounds like a very interesting book. The Nomad Cocktail Book by Leo Robichek. Classy and compact, the new cocktail book from the famed New York hotel bar The Nomad is a stately addition to the world of a bar-focused recipe book. Ideal for folks who are comfortable making advanced drinks at home, there's no lengthy explanations of how to make cocktails, just a whopping collection of 300 recipes. More than 100 are new to the book, paired with elegant illustrations. That comes out on October 22nd. We also have a brief history of the lager, 500 Years of the World's Favorite Beer by Mark Dredge. The lager family tree, which includes styles ranging from Pilsner to Dunkel in its historic emergence, is charted with carbonation sharp precision in the latest from best-selling beer author Mark Dredge. Dredge defines the basics, what is a lager, in addition to excavating the beer's ancestors and exploring the transformation of the style once it reached American shores. Full of shareable tidbits, Dredge's book explains it all in an entertaining fashion, weaving in personal stories to keep the tale of the centuries-old lager fresh as ever. And then finally, we have Vineyards. And by the way, A Brief History of the Lager comes out on October 29th. Now moving on to Vineyards by Fred Lyon, our final on our list. In the 1940s, Fred Lyon was an amateur photographer and wine-loving person in San Francisco. Combining his interests, Lyon spent the next seven decades photographing vineyards across the globe, all while running his own small vineyard in Napa. In his new book, The Coffee Table Style Vineyards, it is a gorgeous retrospective of his photography, illustrating the nature, history, and humanity found among the vines. That comes out on November 5th. And that brings us to an end of our program. You've been listening to And With Your Spirits, an Iris original program. Thanks for sharing your time with Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Let us know what you think about this program by calling 515-243-6833 or by visiting iowaradioreading.org. This has been Andrew Halp with you here. Have a great week, everyone.